This is Tape 2, Side 2 of The Impersonal Actor. So, now, if character is not how we determine how a moment is acted, how a beat is acted, how a scene is acted, for, as we have seen, character is what is done and what is said, how do we know how to do a moment? How do we know how it goes? Well, the first thing is to consider what we call the circumstances. You will need to go over this section frequently, for while it is short, within it lay the secret to the understanding of material. Let's go back to the actor's analects for a moment. Tojiro, while rehearsing a play in which he was both acting and directing, approached, in the scene, as a character, a village gate, late at night, and knocked at the gate. Now, I'm not going to do these for you because I want you to think and work this out. It's rather like an acting word problem. Seek the answers, and you will find them. When the actor playing the night watchman heard the knock, he yawned and shouted, "Who's there?" Tojiro would not accept this and said, "That is an early evening voice. I'll knock again." He did so, and the actor playing the night watchman yawned again, "Who's there?" But Tojiro said, "If you say it like that, it sounds like a dawn voice." Tojiro criticized him 15 or 16 times during the course of rehearsals. Here, Sakata Tojiro is having the actor look for the way to say the line not according to the actor's idea of how his character would say the line, but rather according to the situational environment in which the character currently exists. These situational environments are called the circumstances. As you work out this problem, be thinking on the following things. 1. In the play, Tojiro approaches the gate late at night. The night watchman first responded with what Tojiro called an early evening voice. What do you think that would be for a gatekeeper in a normal set of circumstances? Well, early evening, everyone is likely not yet back in the village. This tells you that the night watchman assumes that it's probably somebody he knows, that this is something he does with some regularity, and would thus be called out on the way to opening the gate. 2. When he did it again, Tojiro called it a dawn voice. Well, at dawn, the night watchman has likely been quiet and stationary for some time, perhaps napping. The village is also quiet, and he's puzzled at hearing someone at the gate. He's cautious, but does not want to awaken or alarm the village. He also makes a preliminary assumption that whoever is there is early, not late, not from the village, but not likely a foe. 3. Late at night. Well, after all residents should be safe behind the village walls, the knock at the gate is both unexpected and potentially troublesome. He's on guard, but does not want to alarm the village without cause. And this is the moment wanted from the actor by Tojiro. Work this problem out until you're satisfied that what you have done is perfectly accurate to the circumstances only, and not to your idea of the character, and apply this technique to all your work. Your acting will begin to thrive on a new and higher level. The famous Russian actress Tamara Dykarhanova, in discussing the method, said, "It is based on a very simple proposition that in life, in a given situation, human beings function in a certain manner. The actor's purpose is to bring to this given situation, put in a play, that corresponding reality of life itself." The method, it seems, in its original form, is dedicated entirely to truthfully fulfilling human circumstance within written characterization in order to bring about a desired emotional impact upon an audience. It is apparently not an investigation into emotional characterization. If there is a certain specific circumstance, very simple or extremely complex, then there must be a specific, most appropriate human behavior intended by the writer to be portrayed within that circumstance. Or, as the famous tenor Placido Domingo said, "And if you are able to insert yourself without disturbing anything, then you are musical." Well, then so too with acting. If you are able to insert yourself without disturbing the story, then you are dramatic. I realize that this may be unattractive for some, who may have as their primary desire artistic self-expression. But that's a tricky and elusive goal in acting, for like it or not, there is a specific story to be told, not a personal theatrical improvisation, and cooperative intent is not optional. Drama cannot be treated with any real success as a contemporary art. And when it is, it becomes a wonderful thing called performance art, which may be dramatic, but it is not the drama. Circumstances include, but are not entirely limited to, where the action takes place, who is present, whether something has just happened immediately preceding the scene, which is in effect still going on or still being dealt with within this new setting, the time of day, whether there is an impediment of time, whether there is an impediment to communication. You can sum these up by simply asking yourself the question, what exactly is going on? And you must have the discipline here to ask this question without strong opinion offered from the viewpoint of and in defense of your character. You do not own your character. You do not get to defend him. If you say, my character wouldn't say it that way, you are placing a limitation on your own character. But when you say, what is my character communicating or not communicating or not doing under these circumstances, you are then open to understanding the material as opposed to interpreting it. What is written in one's own language need not be interpreted, only understood. You, as the actor, need not be concerned with saying things or doing things in character. It is character that upon first finding out he has won the lottery, he goes to the refrigerator for a beer, say, and not to the telephone. Not that he goes to the refrigerator in any kind of a character. Or, as a famous philosopher said, I am I plus my circumstances. Well, the writing provides what you say and what you do, which is the I of your character, and you, the actor, include the circumstances in how your character says the line. Let's take a quick look at these basic circumstances to illustrate. If the circumstance under consideration is where you are, in church, at a class reunion, on top of any mountain, on the top of Mount Everest, in a car, in a classroom, in your high school classroom, at a wake, at a wedding, at your ex-wife's wedding, on the front porch, the line, how are you, based purely on place, will go quite differently. The time of day, 5 a.m., 10 a.m., 6 p.m., midnight, 2 a.m., the line, hello, based purely on time, will go differently. Who is present? The president, your mother, your enemy, your friend, your wife, your boss, the line, good to see you, based solely on the person, will go differently. Immediate fact. You just won the lottery. You just lost your job. You just fell in love. You just broke up. You're late for an important meeting. The line, what time is it? Based solely on the immediate fact, will go differently. The wonderful blending of all these conditions into an understanding of the circumstances gives the actor an exact knowledge of what is actable in the scene. The way he says hello when he is in church at 10 a.m. sitting next to his boss just after having been fired is going to be different from the way he says hello on the front porch at 5 a.m. to his wife after just having won the lottery. And all of these will go differently if there is a sense of immediacy added to the circumstances, as all of these will go differently if someone is an eye shot or ear shot from whom your character may want to withhold these communications. Where he goes and what he says and what he does are the determining factor of who the character is in the audience's minds. The character is not the determining factor in our minds of where he goes, what he says, and what he does. That may be a writer's process, but not the actor's. To get the most out of the circumstances, proceed through a process of playing potential, as earlier described. That is, as you look for the conditions set forth in the circumstances, assume that your character is full of knowing, wit, charm, intelligence, profound irony, coping, patience, humor, desire, will, winning, interest, and a deep capacity for caring. If I walk up to a house to take a survey, say, and the screen door is locked but the front door is open, and I don't see anyone around and I say, hello, that moment will not be fulfilled if I say, hello? Because that hello is what happens after I've picked up the phone and no one's answered my first hello. If a young lady tells me she thinks I'm the handsomest man she's ever met and I say, please, that moment will not be fulfilled if I say, please. because that pleases what happens when someone keeps kidding around when they should be getting serious. If I find out who the murderer is on the last page of a terrific novel and I say, "Oh," that moment will not be fulfilled if I say, "Oh," because that's what happens when you find out the good route you planned to take on your vacation has been closed for repairs. An encyclopedia salesman returns to my door and says he wants to just say one more thing, and I say, "What?" That moment will not be fulfilled if I say, "What?" Because that "what" is what happens when someone is unrightfully withholding pertinent information from me and I'm onto them and they know it. Let's look at 6 quick examples using the word Monday. Set upon being asked when your bar exam results are posted. Monday. Set upon being asked when you'll pick up your lottery winnings. Monday. Set upon being asked on what day your mother passed away 2 years ago. Monday. Set upon being asked what day it is. Monday. Set upon being asked when your DUI trial begins. Monday. Set upon being asked when your enemy goes to trial for corruption. Monday. It is of such great value for you to be able to comprehend and portray how things go in life based upon a complex set of circumstances and an understanding of human behavior both at its best and at its not so best. Embittered acting purports to be truly feeling, but more often than not, it's only that one actor who receives any reward from that kind of work. Not even the character benefits. Rarely is negativity written as the thing to be acted, though sometimes it is the thing to be perceived. You don't want to be confused by the two. Now, there is a very important exception to this rule of circumstance, which you'll need to be looking for in comedy. In comedy, there may be written inappropriate responses to the circumstances for a joke. Say, in a grim black comedy, your character might well say good morning to his mother at his father's wake the same way he would say good morning to his friend just after winning the lottery, particularly if he really disliked his father. But generally, that kind of aberration would clearly be noted with a literary adjustment in italics, such as cheerily. Also, if your character is in denial of the circumstances, you will see him behaving within a completely different set of circumstances, which can make for farce or the story of a madman or even great stories of the human spirit enduring unspeakable hardship. Look at the circumstances with an optimistic prejudice on the behalf of your character. You want to succeed in life, don't you? Then you must give your character the same bias toward hopeful thinking and action. In review, what your character says in a given situation is his character. You will determine how your character says the line by the circumstances. 80 years ago, in 1914, the brilliant Irish playwright George Bernard Shaw responded to the request of a boyhood friend to provide a guideline on rehearsing. Shaw's letter to his friend, which was eventually published under the title The Art of Rehearsal, addressed the whole process of rehearsing and acting. Shaw's views on the subject are most insightful, and we're going to look at some of his thoughts on working, and I know you'll find them as valuable now as they were 80 years ago. The beginning and the end of the business, from the author's point of view, Shaw wrote, is the art of making the audience believe that real things are happening to real people. Now think about that for a moment. To make the audience believe that real things are happening to real people, not to make yourself believe it, not to make the other actors believe it, not to make the director believe it, but to make the audience believe it. But the actor, male or female, continues Shaw, may want the audience to believe that it is witnessing a magnificent display of acting by a great artist, and when the attempt to do this fails, the effect is disastrous, because then there's neither play nor great acting. The play is not credible, nor the acting fascinating. He goes on to say, that is why comparatively humble actors who do not dare to think they can succeed apart from the play often give much better representations than star casts. Shaw talked about the art of emotional suggestion, which is featuring emotion over the circumstances of the script, as commonly practiced by leading actors of his day. He proposed that the proper response to this kind of acting would be to tell the offending party, Mere suggestion is no use here. I don't ask you to suggest anything. I give you the actual things to do and say. I don't want you to look as if you could say wonderful things if you uttered your thoughts. I give you both the thoughts and the words, and you must get them across the footlights. Clearly, Shaw is not mincing words here, and it's more than some care to swallow. But in this course, we'll be talking a lot about where your focus needs to be as an actor. There's a lot more involved in getting a job than just being a good actor. The forces seen and unseen, and even more importantly, your personal thinking, play a huge part in how things unfold for you, whatever you do. But when you do get the job, as a pro or as an amateur, you will want and desire to do the best work that you can, and how you think about what you do has a lot to do with that result. Shaw concludes that the actor will often, quote, try hard to get in the old suggestive business between the lines, to escape from the play, to substitute a personal performance of her own for the character you wanted the audience to believe her to be, unquote. The teacher Yuji Kaganojo said, it is bad to make applause the main purpose of your chanting. Sakata Tojuro said, if you wish to be praised, the best way to set about this is to forget the audience and to concentrate upon playing the play as if it were really happening. The great teacher Tsuji Kuhei said, the actor who puts his whole strength into rehearsal will find that his performance, even though it comes easily to him, will not in the slightest degree be inappropriate. If he does not put his whole energy into rehearsal and technique, and only gives out his full effort when on the stage, his acting will undoubtedly seem laborious and inferior, and the audience will very soon lose interest. Sakata Tojuro commented on the fact that, in a play he had just seen, he could see no difference between the characters of the servant and the mistress. He correctly surmised that the actor playing the servant was jealous of the primary position of the actor in the company playing the mistress. He said about the actor playing the servant, however hard he tries to play the servant in a servant-like way, if he is thinking of outdoing the other actor, the thought of this will be with him all the time. If in his role as a servant he is thinking of outdoing his mistress, he is not a servant, nor is the lady the mistress. If there were a retainer of that sort today, there would be nothing to do but discharge him. At this rebuke, the whole company was struck with admiration, and the offending actor apologized. The teacher Kyoemon said, the actor's duty is to work energetically and industriously, regardless of the quality of the play. If he does so, even a play only two-thirds worthwhile will seem satisfactory. At all events, to play in a mood of criticism will cause harm. Let's briefly discuss the nature of extreme emotion and emotional preparation as it regards acting and the performer. As we've previously discussed, so much is made of this aspect of acting, the emotional aspect, to the exclusion of so many other very important aspects of the work, things like intelligence, humor, irony, clarity, circumstances, objectivity, the looking, issues, and others. Of course, the emotional aspect of the work is the one that gets all the attention, all the reviews, as it were, and so is held in high regard, as it should be. But in reality, this aspect of the work of the actor is no more nor less important than any other. It just seems that way. However, because of this, the emotional performance tends to create the highest degree of anxiety and therefore demands the greatest amount of energy. It needn't. And here we're going to discuss in the simplest possible terms why that is. Highly emotional states, while absolutely natural to the human condition, are dangerous to the human animal. In states of high positive or high negative emotion, the human animal is actually in a very vulnerable condition. That is to say, rage as opposed to anger, grief as opposed to sorrow, hilarity as opposed to laughter, fear as opposed to concern, are conditions in imbalance. Rage, grief, hilarity, fear, and depression are more or less states of hysteria, which leave us exceedingly vulnerable. Fear is so vulnerable a condition, in fact, that the human animal cannot long stay there and turns to flight or fight as a means of resolving the precarious state. The adult human that we are senses the vulnerability at these moments and millions of years of human consciousness works to repress these extreme emotions whenever they arise. It's no mystery. It's neither right nor wrong. It just is. We have long since masked the reality of the animal response with that of social stigma to excessive emotions. But the reason there is a social stigma to that kind of free release at all has its origins deep, deep in the primordial forest of man's early beginnings. A squeal of laughter, an explosion of rage, a scream of terror, or a wail of tears, and every carnivore for miles knew of it. So one of the things that looks, feels, and seems wrong about strong emotion as it is portrayed so often in acting is that it is portrayed as coming freely. In fact, in the human experience, none of these emotions emanates without first coming through a lid of repressive consciousness millions of years old. So in playing out these emotions, these expressed feelings, we have a valuable tool which places them in the correct human frame of behavior so that they will ring true. And very simply, the tool is this. When preparing to play a highly emotional scene, or when your character voices or physicalizes intense emotion, simply, with your imagination, assume the emotional state already exists, and then act strongly to restrain it. So then the actable thing is not the emotion, but the repression of the emotion, for nothing energizes emotion quite like the repression of it. So that when you sob, you're trying not to. When you guffaw, you're trying not to. When you rail, you're trying not to. And when you scream from terror, you're trying not to. And believe me, you will feel it all the more. As you keep this in mind, conscious of the appropriate level of repression as determined by the circumstances, your emotional work will have the correct and true dynamic of the human experience. It won't make your psychiatrist happy, but it will have a profound effect upon your audience, and it will feel true emanating from you. At the beginning of Act 3, Scene 2 of William Shakespeare's Hamlet, you will find a remarkable monologue. Most of you are familiar with it. It's Hamlet's speech to the players, which begins, "Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue." It seems clear that the sentiments expressed by the Prince of Denmark regarding the nature of performance must reflect Shakespeare's own thoughts regarding what he referred to as the purpose of playing. I encourage you to carefully read and study this monologue, for in it there is truly fine instruction. The author says, among other things, "Speak as quickly as people do, at the speed of life, and easily. Use your hands and arms effortlessly and economically. Keep your work effortless and emotionally balanced, especially the passionate scenes, which we will discuss in our section on issues. Let your volume be correct for the dramatic situation, not for the crowd. Keep it smart. Be frank, but not too big, and do less, so that when more is called for, it will have meaning. Let your work be modest. Act people, not caricatures. Do what's appropriate to the circumstances, as previously discussed. Let your character be about other people and what's going on, not about himself. These truly are your starting point in the work. They are your primary checklist, and as such will guide you well." This is the end of Tape 2 of The Impersonal Actor. Our discussions will continue on Tape 3.